The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I just got all this set up and I realized I did not get an Instagram feed going. I take like 1 week off. I'm way off my game. This is hilarious. But thank you everybody for tuning in. This is the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show where we talk about all of the news that's breaking. I like to hold my show on a Monday and engage with this incredible chat that we already have showing up here, seeing Lampros, Paul Puri, Bryant, Barry Johnson, Fungi, Al Sabakli, Fungi, Kappa Cash, Paul the T-Guy, Bionic Scoop, J-Man150, Fat Produce, just some real good friends in here already chatting about what's going on. Now, normally we'd be breaking up this show. We'd have like a news block and talk tech and politics. We'd have a gadget block and talk about, you know, breaking news and reviews and things like that. This week, I think we can be pretty confident that this week Apple is going to dominate a good chunk of this news cycle. And wouldn't you know it, WWDC happens today. And where I normally start my podcast, WWDC would have started right in the middle of my podcast. So you got two things you can do there. I was thinking maybe we could have turned this into a watch along, but I don't even want to mess with Apple's potential IP. You know, if there's like a takedown request or if our stream gets cut off or anything like that. So I didn't really want to play with that. So the other alternative is we're starting our show a little earlier this week and we can speculate, we can hang out, have a good time, just as like the pre-show, getting us into the mood before we check out what Apple has to offer for their developer conference this year. And then if we want to, I am totally good to let the chat just kind of take the wheel, ask questions. We can go wherever you folks would want to go. But that's also why I'm calling this week a PJ podcast. It's not going to be as structured. It's not going to be as sort of segmented or regimented. We're going to be kind of moving through some rumors, talking about what we think Apple might be showing off. I'm definitely curious to get some opinions, what you folks have to say about things like the rumored price of Apple's, I mean, whatever, it's a VR headset, I guess. I'm a little tired of this game we're playing with mixed XR reality AR interface visor headset. I mean, it's just a VR headset.
I don't really feel like any technology has really usurped or unseated the VR headset. So I'm going to be really curious to see what y'all have to say, or what your thoughts are about what Apple might reveal there. We can talk about some of the changes that are coming to iOS and iPadOS. I think the Apple Watch is supposed to be getting some significant upgrades. At least, again, we're dealing with the rumors and the leaks and what people are speculating Apple might have to say. And then also if whether or not we think that this is going to be a show for them to show off any significant hardware. Because I'm getting the feeling that they're going to focus on one piece of hardware, but then this is going to be a software-focused updates, operating systems, and apps kind of WWDC. A little less like Google using I/O to show off more and more hardware over time. So, Paul the tea guy. I was so close to getting my wife to leave Apple for an Oppo. I mean, Find X6 is pretty sweet. I mean, it's a really nice looking phone. It's the one that I'm still, sometime this summer, I'm going to try and get my hands on that Find X6 Pro. But yeah, that's, right now, that's my white whale. I've been digging the Xiaomi. I've spent a lot of quality time with the Sony. I've really enjoyed the Vivo, but the Oppo is just always kind of evading my grasp. Here, let me get this down here. Zaza, Oppo pulled out of every country but China. Well, I don't want to derail and talk about, you know, sort of EU regulations and Germany going after IP and content and Nokia and patents for 5G radios. But yeah, the Oppo story has been been pretty convoluted. So, everybody, thanks for tuning in. I hope you had a lovely weekend. Last week, I took the week off just so that we could I could spend some time with the fam doing Memorial Day activities. It was a really lovely long weekend last week. And then this last weekend, we're just hopping. It is crazy the social calendar that a 7-year-old can generate. That my wife and I are having to run this aggressive zone defense to keep Lex up with all of her play dates and birthday parties and end of year school activities. This is her last week of first grade. And what's a saying? The saying is like the days are long, but the years are fast, something like that, where like every day feels like you have to sprint a marathon as aggressively as you possibly can. The day just beats you up. And then you look back and you think, holy cow, it's been a whole school year. How did it go by so fast? So it's been a lot of intense work. If we want, we can also just completely divert throughout this podcast. I got to see Beyond. That would have been some hot news right there. Across the Spider-Verse, the sequel to Into the Spider-Verse. Lex had a friend's birthday party where they just bought out like half of a movie theater, and all of these kids were like running around the movie theater lobby and causing total bedlam. And we get to the theater and the kids sit down and they hand them out just these little bags of popcorn, and the movie finally starts, because we actually kind of held the kids back so they weren't sitting through all the trailers, because they were just like out of their gourds, like crazy and silly and playing around. You got to let the kids burn off that energy. So we finally get in and the movie starts, and like, I don't know how many kids were there. I want to say it was like 13 or 14, 6 to 8-year-olds. And the movie starts and they just shut down. And I had never seen that before. Lex is kind of a wiggly, fidgety little kid. And that movie started and she just kind of went back into her recliner and was like, I'm watching this movie. And that movie is long. It's almost 2.5 hours long. And she was there. She was there for like every minute of it. So high recommend. I am very happy. I'm very impressed with what they did for a sequel to one of my all-time favorite comic book movies. And I think they're really doing a good job with the Miles Morales character. So that was our weekend. I hope you've had a lovely weekend. I want to jump in. I want to start talking some Apple stuff. Apple is woefully undercovered on my channel. I still don't feel their public declarations on as to their privacy, how they utilize user data, how they're now incorporating more ads and blocking other advertising services. I feel like that should be considered an anti-competition and an anti-consumer business practice. I know Apple has walked back some of their plans as it pertains to on-device content scanning for abuse imagery, but I still have not seen the company execute a forward-thinking vision as it pertains to consumer privacy, data security, and new software and new features where I feel comfortable bringing them back to my channel to review. So I'm taking a philosophically political stance on why I don't cover Apple products on YouTube.com/WanBagnell or Patreon.com/SomeGadgetGuy. Until I see some type of business change where I feel more comfortable using those products again and talking about them, and again, any kind of coverage becomes tantamount to an ad for that product, either for or against. Even if I'm negative or critical, it's still promotion of that product. I want to see changes to how they do business with other businesses. I want to see changes to how they do business with their production partners. And I want to see changes now to how they interact with their own customers. I feel the people who are most hurt by Apple's business practices are the customers who are heavily invested in the Apple ecosystem. So that's just my little preamble. Because if you go to my YouTube channel, there's nothing. If Apple is mentioned tangentially, the thing is, I still go out of my way to try and experience this stuff. It's not that I'm just sitting back and I'm refusing to touch it at all. I have way too many family members and way too many friends who I need to at least speak some iOS and some iPadOS and some macOS just to be able to interact with. Again, if you work in production, you at least have to have some kind of foggy idea of how macOS works, because let me tell you, MacBook users do not speak Windows at all. They have no idea what Windows even looks like today. Their conception of Windows in the production space here in Los Angeles is like Windows XP. And then you show them what like a Windows tablet looks like, and they're like, oh, but that's different. You're like, yeah, I'm gonna say look around from time to time. So I still feel like I can share some opinions in very specific ways, like where I feel an Apple camera is really not living up to Apple's marketing and to the consumer expectations of this being the best camera on a smartphone. Total crap. You can miss me with this aspirational feel-good marketing in relation to one of the most expensive phones on the market today, grossly underperforming when you compare it to similar hardware on other devices. So it's a complicated issue. I feel like I've made this dance a couple of times now, where early in my legit tech career, I was a diehard Apple knight. I mean, just Apple, everything they did. I was working on a DOE contract. I was working for a DOE contractor on a JIT contract, and we were managing and supporting all of these gorgeous Power Macs. So like every day I'd be like working with the sales team, then working with the labs. This is for DOE labs in New Mexico. And then I'd get to go down to the warehouse and help just build the systems, because they were built to order. They were built to spec. And I had just had my hands in the guts of these IBM, you know, dual core, dual socket, monster workstations. And I just loved it. I loved everything about it. Then later on, especially with more mobile, I became something of a Samsung knight. Then I became an LG stan. And it's like, either the company grotesquely walks away from me as a potential customer, or the company goes out of business. And I've never been able to stick the landing on a company just existing and continuing to make products that I love and support. So, yeah, grounded tech. Sony are the ones getting ripped to bits right now. We should chat about that a little too, especially for, I've put out some Sony coverage. I did the camera thermal throttle. I'm not spending a lot of time on housekeeping, but boy, howdy, has a lot of stuff gone out If you go to somegadgetguy.com or patreon.com/somegadgetguy, you can see an incredible amount of content. Way too much me to consume in one day. So, WWDC is 1 hour and 45 minutes away from broadcast at the time that I have just said that time. That was really awkwardly put. I think one of the things that, what I kind of want to start this conversation off with, you know, one of the better roundups. So I've got the Wired article. I can actually just screen share this. Like, I'm not memorizing all this stuff. I've got like some notes and some images and some websites up, but the general layout of what to expect at Apple's WWDC 2023 from Wired. This is Brendan Stoliar. So just a very simple, just a very clean roundup on the main bullet points. So we should expect some conversation about iOS 17. We should expect some conversation about iPad OS 17, Mac OS 14, Watch OS 10, and the Reality Pro headset with the XROS operating system for their headsets. So the thing that kind of bugs, and one of the things I don't think we've done a very good job with as techies is highlighting those years where instead of getting big, flashy, exciting updates, big, exciting new features, I don't think we do a very good job of celebrating when a company pauses on some of that development to go back and better refine their products. When I was covering Apple a lot, my favorite years for iPhones weren't the new designs. Every new design for an iPhone has come with significant issues, and every S series would fix those issues. You would get the better phone on the S series phones, but then you would see like the sales disparity. The look of the phone was the same, so how could people know that you bought the most recent, latest, and greatest phone if you buy the S series? And that to me, especially as like a practical nerd who really tries to drive every gadget as hard as they possibly can, that would always hurt my soul. And I really feel like Apple fit that up until around the iPhone XS. And the XS turned out to be a very poorly supported product in the whole pantheon of iPhones. It lost good support for force pressing. The camera never really got updated beyond just getting sort of a reskin of the camera UI. That was the year, the iPhone XS was the year the Pixel 3a came out, I think. Or the Pixel 3a was launched within a window around the iPhone XS. And so here's this little Android phone at like, what, $399? Didn't the Pixel 3a launch like sub $400 or somewhere in there? And here's like a $1,000 iPhone XS. And Apple could never bring a night mode to the iPhone XS. You need special bits to make a night mode. And here's this little $400 Android that takes amazing photos at night. And you're like, that to me was like sort of the end of the S series blessing. But we keep imbuing Apple with this special vaunted position in the tech space. There's like a whole debate fallacy philosophy of, well, if Apple does something, it must be the right thing to do. You always sort of justify by leading with the assumption that Apple is the best or Apple is correct, and then you find the data that supports that. Too many, I think, tech outlets fall into that trap where, well, I mean, it's the most popular, so people must like these things. And you're like, no, I don't think that's how consumers make their choices on this stuff, especially once they're invested. It's difficult to pull your money out of an ecosystem like that. So from my experiences and from reading on the commentary of how Apple has evolved the most recent iPhones over the last year, I don't really feel Apple has earned their reputation this last year with supporting an operating system and supporting software and supporting new features on iPhones in iOS 16. it has been a much more regular thread of articles in my newsfeed. And someone please jump in on this if you feel like my perception of this isn't accurate. But when I'm going through my newsfeed and when I'm going through subreddits, especially the R Apple and R iPhone subreddits, I have seen so many more complaints about clumsy software, buggy apps, UI elements not functioning properly, and poorer support from Apple on these patches and bug fixes and updates. I feel like Google and Android went through this teething pain really hard between Android 10 to Android 12. It took Android 12L to finally get us on a good path. 12L was not perfect. But now into Android 13, I think we're in better shape. And from Android 12 to Android 13, it hasn't been about the radical changes. It's been more about refining and polishing that experience. And I want fewer flashy features. I want an operating system that functions better, that works more consistently and has fewer issues. And this to me, excuse me, this to me is we're leading up into WWDC. As I look at the announcements for iOS 17 and what might be coming down the pipe, really what I'm hoping for is sort of a iOS 16.8. You know, whatever nuance we want to put on that. I'm really hoping iOS 17 and iPadOS 17 are actually not significant departures or are packed with exciting new flashy features. I'm hoping what Apple is able to do is bring a level of polish and to fix some of these issues where, as they keep trying to cram iOS with more functionality, that operating system has not aged as gracefully. We can make Android a little prettier, but it was built with so much more multitasking flexibility to start. As Android has evolved, it's made me frustrated that we've actually reduced some of the potential functionality of Android to make it simpler, to make it a little prettier. So both of these companies are kind of struggling with what catches a consumer and what keeps them invested in this ecosystem. I really feel like iOS 15 wasn't in bad shape, but iOS 16 has continued on a path where Apple is iterating quickly, but they're breaking things and not fixing them as well as Apple's perception in the market would have us believe. Kappa Cash is saying the iPhone 14 and iOS 16 have been so buggy. Marilyn saying good morning. Everyone say good morning to Marilyn. Software complaints are what I see a lot, yet this is what Apple is supposed to be good at. Well, I mean, they're always the best at it. So if Apple's having issues, then Android must be like 10 times worse. Because that's always the way that you can move the goalposts is, well, I mean, what we have isn't great, but if I were to stray from Apple, what I would get is way worse. Which is disappointing because this year is maybe the strongest year we've seen in recent memory where if someone wanted to take that step and try something outside the Apple ecosystem, you would be on a much better combination of hardware and software in Android land than we've had 3 years. I'd say from the 855 and 865 era of SoCs. So yeah, like the beginning of 2020. I'm gonna take a drink of coffee here real quick. Fungi. I don't know who you could be talking about. I would recommend the OnePlus 9 Pro, but I would feel bad recommending it over the S21 Ultra because you can only clear notifications by swiping right. I love it. I love seeing how one little thing, it's like this phone is the most popular. So to make sure it wins, I'm just going to focus on this one little UI thing that isn't the same. It's not even that it's bad. If you've used a OnePlus, I really like my OnePlus 11. I think I'm going to pop my SIM card back in there for a little while. I mean, I've got it in the Moto right now, but I'm just kind of feeling like, just play around a little before we get through the summer and into new phone launches for fall. it makes sense. It makes sense what OnePlus has done. It's a directional control. One direction is a simplified action. The other direction is a more complicated action. It gives you the choice of interacting with that notification in two different ways. Like, it's unfamiliar. I think it's a little clumsy, but it's not as clumsy as having like a split notification shade where you swipe on one side to get controls and toggles and you swipe on the other to get your notifications. Like, I think that's terrible design, especially on a phone that now has like three different vertical swipe actions. That's dumb. let's see from... I have made my preview window here so small. Give me 1 second, and then I'll be able to read what you folks are writing. Because that's like the whole point of this week. From the Suki. For normies like me, Apple products are good enough. Customer support is very important in an area where non-Apple manufacturers constantly stumble. I feel like that is a fair assessment of a global distribution strategy. I was having a conversation with one of the parents, one of Lexi's friends, at her school, and she really wants to get her daughter a tablet. Her father, this is way too much information. You don't need their whole family backstory, but the father had gotten the kid an old Amazon Fire tablet because it was so inexpensive, and she's just 7, so what is she going to do on her tablet? And see, to me, that is the wrong purchasing philosophy. It's not that you want to go out and get your kid those iPad Pros. Remember, I talked about that other birthday party where these kids were playing Roblox on top of the line, the biggest iPad Pros. And the mother was just so gobsmacked that they bend and break so easy. Those iPad Pros, they're so fragile. And like, you got 2 of them for your kids. All right. But you also have a problem when you go to the other extreme. You get your kid like an old Amazon Fire tablet. That's a miserable experience. So the mom is trying to figure out what to get. And one of the absolute biggest concerns for her is like, if there's a problem, Amazon doesn't do anything to help them. Amazon does nothing to help them on this old Fire tablet. And you're like, okay, you have an iPhone. And if you want to control your family account and manage apps and control all this, the only thing that really makes sense is maybe to go and get her an iPad, not an iPad Air, not an iPad Pro, either an iPad or an iPad mini. And she's going to be set. And I feel like this is a much better price to performance. If you want to consider Android, there's this OnePlus that's coming out and there's this Pixel that's coming out, but then your dual ecosystem, and that can be difficult to manage. But after your experience with Amazon, you will appreciate living somewhere where it's a 5-minute drive to get to an Apple store. So that can be a purchasing recommendation for you. I feel there are enough consumers out there who buy into the Apple ecosystem on that promise of, you know, good support and these features and I like and y'all get software updates for 6 years, but then genuinely don't benefit from those perks. The people who can do the basic maintenance on their own and, you know, or it's also a hardship to get to an Apple store, that ecosystem, that infrastructure doesn't help them, but they paid for it. They bought a really expensive product, but they didn't really get the value out of that perk. Where we still have a consumer sentiment where every update is designed to slow your phone down. Apple was legit guilty of that. And I still feel it was one of the greatest consumer ills of our time. Greatest consumer harms where Apple was not appropriately punished for doing that for years. Well, now software updates have this kind of stigma to them. It's harder to get people to update when they should, just because there's this sense memory of, oh, but updates slow my phone down. And I actually still feel like Apple is tangentially still responsible for that kind of business practice, because they purposely tie new features and new apps and new services to specific hardware components. Like I mentioned on the iPhone XS camera, there was no reason why the iPhone XS shouldn't have been able to support some kind of computational low light enhanced mode. But you needed the new camera sensor on the iPhone 11, the iPhone 11 Pro? I don't even know if the iPhone 11 had a good night mode. I think it did. But you had to buy that new hardware to get that new feature. So increasingly, Apple's support is tied to specific components so that it encourages an upgrade sooner than you otherwise might have needed. And it's that kind of rat race where I still feel like, for normies, again, I'm not picking on you, the Suki, it is worth looking outside the Apple ecosystem, because maybe your phone is only supported for 4 years instead of like 6 years on an iPhone. But if you spent half as much money for a comparable experience, I think that's still a net positive. If you can handle some of the basic maintenance and support and bug fixing yourself, then the draw of going to an Apple store becomes way lower. In fact, to me, because I'm the nerd, it is a pain point when I have to engage with tech support in any fashion. You know, it's that Ron Swanson moment where I walk into a Best Buy and immediately have to tell the person at the front, I know more than you, and pass them. I need you out of my way so that I can get to the thing that I need to do or I need to accomplish. It becomes an obstacle. It doesn't become a perk. So this is the nuance in that Apple conversation that I feel too many channels kind of overlook. We want to overly simplify what an average consumer experience should be, and that means the lowest level, most basic kind of use. So why would you buy an iPhone for that? Why would you spend $800 to $900 on just covering the basics? Again, I'm not trying to turn this into a commercial for other companies, because we're talking about WWDC, but when you look at how incredibly diverse and how aggressive the Android mid-range has become, and where these experiences are so close to the base model, the number, not the iPhone Pro, but the regular iPhone, I feel consumers are getting squeezed. I feel like Apple has them, so they know that they can ratchet up prices. And you do get some perks if you genuinely take advantage of what goes on at an Apple store, or you absolutely need the handholding for supporting your gadget. Then that's the cost. That's what it costs. But I feel there are a lot of consumers out there that would probably appreciate the compromise, probably appreciate spending less money, and then still end up with kind of the same communicator, average consumer, daily driver, smartphone experience that they currently turn to Apple for. And that's where I feel like we've kind of lost the thread. We're not good educators. We're not really helping consumers. We're just reinforcing the bias that they come to us to have confirmed. And that makes me sad, because that's a situation where, you know, a lot of people are going to get fleeced. They're going to spend way more than they probably need to. And in this economy, I feel like every penny kind of matters, even for people in the middle class and upper middle class. From Barry Johnson, I see a lot of complaints with respect to the latest iOS. Yes. I can't tell. And someone please, again, I'm trying to keep some perspective on this. I can't tell if this is that confirmation bias where I'm going to Reddit and I'm looking in our iPhone and I'm looking in our iOS, or our Apple, sorry, that's the other subreddit. And there's a turning point. Every subreddit seems to have a turning point where it goes from being a really aggressive fan celebration of that topic to being sort of the place where people go to air their grievances about that product. So it is definitely a skewed perspective on overall Apple ecosystem, Apple community, Apple products, but way more so than in the last couple years, I have not seen the same kind of frustration and the same kind of constant conversation around bugs and issues and security threats and all these things that Apple is supposedly really good at. And that community seems to be struggling with, like, how far to take those criticisms. So to me, it's just, this feels different than last year on iOS 15. And genuinely, Apple's strategy for the iPhone 14 was very underwhelming. I still feel like the Apple 13 and 13 Pro are overall better values than what Apple delivered with the 14 and the 14 Pro. That was my big takeaway from the iPhone launch last year, was, man, this looks like the iPhone 13s would actually be better buys, especially if you can get them on some kind of sale or if you're comfortable shopping used devices or refurbs. Later, the iPhone 14 Pro turned out to be kind of a dog. Apple going through some similar teething pains with higher thermals, where the iPhone 14 Pro doesn't really perform better than the iPhone 13 Pro, and in some cases, especially in graphics-intense gaming, performs worse than the iPhone 13 Pro. Like, oh, it's so much more powerful, and I can use that power for 90 seconds, and then my frame rate crashes. Android users know the pain of that. We went through 2 years of that before we finally got to this year. I feel like iPhone users aren't prepared. They don't understand that kind of issue. From Paul Puri. Okay. It's well known that Apple makes pretty decent hardware, but their software in more recent history has never been consistent. But maybe I have more to complain about with Apple software because I always got updates. Bazinga! I really enjoyed that comment, ending it with the bazinga. But see, isn't this the reputation that a company earns? And then I feel like they don't keep supporting that reputation. Apple has this reputation from the days of Windows XP, of Macs don't get viruses. This is generational marketing. Macs don't get viruses. Apples get updates and softwares and all that stuff, right? And so I really feel like in the last 2 years, we've seen Apple streamlining some of that business practice, kind of coasting on that reputation and not really bringing it to the consumers in the way that they market and advertised. I'm taking another drink of coffee here.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
I've got to catch up on this. how do I say Skrzegazikowicz? I cannot pronounce that. I am sorry. I'm a monolingual American who dabbles with some Spanglish. Can't wait for Apple to bend its knee for USB-C on the iPhone. Once we get through WWDC, we do have to keep an eye on Apple's hardware strategy because we'll have to see if Apple breaks USB-C. Apple's entire business model since the launch of the iPhone has been, how can we take an established standard, break it, and sell something proprietary? Bluetooth, file transfers, no. USB, a media transfer protocol, MTP support, no. I mean, like, this is such a radical vice grip on their customers to not let them interact easily with other platforms and other services and other devices. So I am not confident that USB-C on the iPhone is really going to be any different than Lightning connector, and it's going to be up to the EU. American regulators are too dumb. They're not going to get involved on iPhone breaking USB. But hopefully someone in France or in Germany is going to say, hey, wait a minute. The whole reason we're doing this is so that we don't have proprietary fake standards. So no, you can't do that, or you've got to pay us a grip of money. That's the only saving grace. If regulators in the EU don't jump on that, then we're going to have the worst experience with Apple switching the iPhone over to USB. It's going to be the same as Lightning connector, but even more confusing for consumers, having certified Apple cables that work with certified Apple chargers. And, oh, no, well, we can't use this Android USB cable to charge the iPhone. That would be dangerous. and it's all FUD and it's all dumb. And unfortunately, Apple can just say that because there's no real pushback in any kind of tech sphere or commentary or in any type of journalism, because no company, no news outlet wants to lose access to Apple. So they'll always let Apple put whatever spin on it that they want, because they know that they'll get the clicks and they'll get the views and they'll get what they want, and that's how they monetize their traffic. I'm not confident that we'll get a good USB, an actual USB stand experience on the iPhone. So we'll have to see how that happens. Gormlord, no, you're using it wrong. iOS is working as it is intended. It's just you. I'm definitely holding it wrong. Fungi. My mom couldn't back up her phone because her storage was full. Let me phrase that differently. My mom couldn't back up her phone because of a problem Apple created. My grandmother, unfortunately, is going through something similar. And I need to talk to my aunt and my grandmother and just like, she's got, my grandmother is super tech savvy for a woman, for a 90-year-old woman. And she does incredible work on her iPad. But she's also something, she's like me, she's kind of a hoarder. So like every image she sees that she likes, if it's a painting, if it's a photo, if it's digital art, she takes screenshots of everything. And sometimes she'll even take some of those screenshots and like print them out on like 3x5s. She has filled the storage on 2 iPads and I think a second tier of cloud storage that she was paying like 10 or 15 bucks a month. So anytime she would get support from Apple, they wouldn't actually help her fix the problem. They're like, oh, you know what you need to do? Let's just bump you up another tier in iCloud. And like, for my grandmother being tech savvy, a 90-year-old woman isn't understanding the nuance. She thinks like, oh, they're just unlocking an extra little feature. It's going to cost me like 10 bucks. Okay, cool. She's not getting, they're not selling it to her appropriately. They're not selling her like every year you're going to be spending like another $150, $180 on this extra pocket of cloud storage. And it doesn't fix the local storage on your iPad. But that's the only solution that they kind of pop up. And then they get the quick sale and like, oh yeah, your iPad's working again and we can offload and back this stuff up. But they're not really helping her. So my uncle and my mom basically just cut it off. And so now her iCloud is totally frozen because she's not paying Apple anymore. But her iPads are now essentially useless. And talking her through how to do things like delete files, man, is it a pain when you're going through hundreds and thousands of screenshots and photos on an iPad to clear out your local storage. And this is a woman that like doesn't want to let go of that stuff because she likes it. She'll scan through her photo gallery and her screenshot gallery. She likes visiting with this. But those kinds of situations, that's to me why I'm always so skeptical of every move that Apple makes in regards to this kind of stuff, because like I see the impact. If you're tech savvy like the folks in this chat, like if you're watching this stream or listening to the replay of this podcast later, you are an exceptional techie. You have excellent taste and you understand nuance. There's no reason why you would be consuming a podcast like mine if you weren't more of a connoisseur of technology and not one of these mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging average consumers that are mentioned in other tech videos and other tech reviews. I genuinely don't believe that kind of average consumer really exists, but we can save that for another podcast. When Apple has created these services and has impacted the design of their products to fit these services, that's where I feel a consumer harm can emerge. And if you're not as tech savvy as we are, to be able to work with, you know, someone struggling with how their device operates, Apple software is actually not very intuitive when it comes to those types of management issues. They are designed to push you towards a solution which will profit Apple more. That is a very big difference. They can be easy to use, but then I think Apple creates pain points in managing the product beyond that simple capture, simple use. And I think my grandmother has kind of fallen into that trap. So now she's trying to manage everything on an old iPhone, And that is not as good for her. You know, that small screen for a 90-year-old woman, not great. So I need her to send me this stuff so I can just at least try and do something to get those iPads functional again so she can get back to doing the stuff that she wants to do. It's disappointing because that is when I was, especially when I was like the Apple knight, when I was diehard Apple could do no wrong, that's the expectation I would have had, is that Apple would be able to at least work with their customers to present them the appropriate solutions for what they really need. And instead, my grandmother has twice gotten Apple customer service reps who just sold her more iCloud. That's not okay. That doesn't really solve her problem. And in fact, it creates an even bigger problem where the performance of those iPads is still struggling because they're maxed out. Their storage is full. But you still see that you've got room to upload, and I go to my storage tab and I've got this iCloud thing and I can still put in more. It's like trying to explain to someone that just because you still have checks in your checkbook, it doesn't mean you still have money in your account. Like, I'm having to go and teach those lessons to like my parents and my grandparents now. Well, not necessarily my parents. I feel like my parents kind of get it, but it's to me it's a concept I'm really struggling with, because I feel Apple needs to have some kind of oversight or some kind of limit on that business practice, because it's pretty gross. From Copacash, iOS needs a revamp, but I think Apple is scared to do that because they don't want to make it unfamiliar to their millions of users. These little baby steps are definitely teething pains. Like, the launch of App Library was so clumsy. And so many people are like, oh, it's so intuitive, and it works so well, and it's just so fluid. And you're like, nah, it's a crappy app drawer. It really doesn't work that well. Man, Otaku. No, Gormlord is right. If you have a problem with iOS, the problem is actually with you. iOS, like all things Apple, is perfect. I stand corrected. I now have confirmation. The motion has been seconded, and we'll take it to a vote. hold on. Let me scroll down. Oh, from Michael Peppertech. And again, I think this is an excellent nuance of the different ecosystems. And MPT does great analysis on this kind of stuff. So definitely give him a follow or check out his channel if you haven't. I have noticed that while Android is super stable as far as the OS goes, apps I use not loading the first time and having to clear cache or restart a lot. This is one of the most difficult aspects to explain in a review. Because the harder you push a little pocket computer, the more those little differences start to stand out. And some phones in Android land seem to handle this more gracefully than others. Again, those of us who are more comfortable sort of diagnosing these issues and performing some of the basic maintenance, we can overlook. Like, I take it for granted that I'm going to be going in and occasionally doing things like clearing cache. And then I go to a subreddit, you know, our Android or our iPhone, and people are like, whoa, how is all my storage gone? And I have to stop for a second and remember, like, oh, a lot of people using these gadgets did not grow up with, like, hundreds of megabytes on a hard drive that would occasionally need to be defragged, and that you still had to know some DOS commands to fix up an operating system. Okay, we've got to go back to basics for some people in what is a computer and how does it function. And so this is one of those things, like what Michael Peppertech is talking about is absolutely an inconsistency in the experience in the Android operating system. And I feel like Google's recent moves in changing how apps are designated storage actually haven't fixed the problem. I think it's made it worse. So things like scoped storage on Android, we don't have to spend all this time talking about Android stuff, but scoped storage on Android, I feel actually made the problem of app inconsistency, slower loading times, and app crashes worse. So developers tried to just shoehorn their old app into this new storage strategy, And genuinely, that didn't work well. And a lot of those apps that were dependent on fast access to storage, having to copy project files from one bucket to another bucket, or there are some apps that are actually duplicating the content with every time you use their app. So let's say you've got a photo in your photo gallery, and then the app has its own bucket of storage under scoped storage. What you have to do behind the scenes is actually copy the photo into the bucket. So now the photo is living in two different spots, and it's taking up twice as much storage, and the cache is having to remember that. And then you do your edits to the photo, and then it saves the new version of that photo. Well, there's also the saved version in the scoped bucket, and then you have to put it back into the main photo gallery, and you can fill up the cache, the bucket, very, very quickly if that's not handled in an efficient way. If the app developer isn't optimizing for that kind of split storage idea issue. And that's just with something simple like slapping a filter on a photo. This gets way more complicated the more aggressive that you try to use this stuff. And Michael Peppertech is absolutely someone who is trying to use his devices very aggressively. He does a lot of work on his mobile gear. So it's difficult to kind of express how complicated that dance is in the background and how it should be more easily managed by consumers. So before, when I was saying Google is making moves that are kind of reducing the flexibility and the functionality of Android, to me, their storage strategy has actually gotten worse. And I feel like app performance has likewise gotten worse because of this strange security bucket that they want to put every app in. Being able to express that, being able to explain why it works the way it does and what are ways that you need to work around the limitations of that is a very difficult conversation to get out. Again, I feel like enough phones are handling it well enough that hopefully consumers aren't running into these issues on the regular, but that's also why I've been so aggressive in recommending less expensive phones. If you're really only doing like basic stuff on your phone, there's no reason to spend more. Some of these teething pains are a little less painful if they're happening on like a $300 to $400 phone as opposed to like a $1,200 phone. It gets messy, and it gets all wrapped up in these kinds of expectations. Oh, and Michael Peppertech is letting us know the OnePlus Nord N30 launched got an email today. Who feels like that's not great timing from OnePlus? There are some companies that can pull off the let's get ahead of the major press announcement. I don't know that anyone's getting lit up about a Nord right before WWDC. Yeah. That's not great. So Alex Karam, seems pretty likely WWDC will see the launch of an AR/VR headset. Are there any predictions? So I know I am missing a whole bunch of comments in between, but I feel like this is a pretty good spot. That was just supposed to be some light musings on iOS 17. My hope for iOS 17, just to reiterate, my hope for iOS 17 is just optimization. I really want to see Apple tackle some of these functionality teething pains. I want to see them working with their developers more closely to kind of polish these experiences. And I'm really tired of Apple promoting new features or new software early, getting all the hype and the buzz, and then that new feature takes like 6 or 7 months to actually arrive on the new phone after it launches. Excuse me. You know, like, how many times we've seen, this is an amazing new camera feature. It's going to be coming to this iPhone. And then it doesn't really show up for like 7 months. Well, you only really get the newest new features on an iPhone in that kind of first year. So Apple got all the positive buzz. They got all the hype. They got all the excitement. But you didn't really get the phone they promised until like 7 months into that phone's life cycle. And then you really only have about a half a year of it being the most focused on iPhone, receiving all of the flashiest, the best support, the newest updates, before then it becomes sort of the B team as they launch a new iPhone. And this is a cycle that I really hope we can see some kind of shift or change. Again, I feel like we overpromise, then we don't deliver. Consumers are left feeling like it's all just hype or that it's all a lie. And then they miss when something really new does come out. They miss when something exciting does change how they could be using their phone. Because, well, you know, like, yeah, I mean, Apple says it's the best iPhone they've ever made, whatever. I just do the basic things. I play Candy Crush and text message, and that's about all I do. And instead, we could be encouraging those people to try. And I don't think Apple does a very good job of that. For as much aspirational marketing as they really put on the iPhone, how many people do we know in our circles of family and friends that get the most expensive devices and do very little on them? And when you show them the other things they could be doing, it's like, oh, yeah, but I don't know that I'll do that. But you should try. You spent all this money. Give it a shot. Oh, and Hawks is saying good morning. Like, man, I am way behind on this chat. Whew. There's some really good stuff going on in this chat. Jeff, bang, bang, Nord gang. I haven't played with the Nord since the first year of release. I really should take another one for a spin. There's so much stuff to talk about. Okay. Apple VR headset. Who is ready for Apple to invent VR? I mean, no one has done it to this point. I don't read tech news or articles or play with gadgets. Like, I don't have a bucket in my closet with like a mixed reality headset, and I certainly don't have a shelf full of like wearable displays that you can put on your face and consume content that way. I think we're due. I really feel like this is an oversight of the larger tech industry that no one has thought of putting screens into some kind of visor that you can wear on your face to create a more immersive experience. So I am ready for Apple to invent this type of product category. Genuinely, I think it's only something Apple can invent. I don't think anyone else is qualified to make a product like that. DT Anil was already going with me on that terrible, terrible joke. I can't wait to finally treat my eyes to VR. Bryant Billings, it does not exist until Apple does it. From Root Knight, I can't wait for VR to be invented since absolutely no one ever has released a VR headset in the last 7 years. Talks with TJ. I'm sorry, you guys are cracking me up. I'm ready for no one else in the industry with this innovation. Brian Billing. Next up, Apple will invent a flip foldable. Gabaletta. I'll have you know, sir, that Apple knows VR better than anyone, just like they knew wireless charging better than anyone, or their Bluetooth speaker strategy was better than anyone else's. From Jeff, correction, only Apple can make it magical. Gormlord, man, you're killing me. Gormlord, all I can say is that the price will definitely be justified. They'll just do it better, no doubt about it. Apple's never first to the party, but they always do it the bestest. So strict, but doesn't VR struggle so hard? Sony VR fails, same does Meta and Apple. In my opinion, it's going to be the next 3D TV tech. I'm really hoping we can keep it from being that, but I feel like Meta has been a double-edged sword. For what Facebook is trying to do with VR, I think has kind of stalled the VR experience. And I feel, you know, Zuckerberg's involvement in trying to make VR like another place to work has kind of stalled the experiences that you can create with VR. Again, that to me was a solution that no one really wanted. I didn't want another immersive biological interface to be more productive. I think VR has so many more applications and so much more potential in a sphere of other entertainment, educational, and practical industries than, like, this is a new place to take my Zoom calls. So I feel like, and I'm definitely oversimplifying, the work that Meta engineers and Oculus engineers were doing on the Quest is more interesting than that. But the way that it was presented and the way that it was packaged to just general consumers was kind of weak. I feel like this is one of those things where, again, techies are really not good at looking at what an ecosystem of products really resembles. Like, there was another editorial. I wrote an editorial on the Patreon, and I'm thinking about publishing it publicly. But it's just basically some musings on all of the people that are acting like Apple needs to come and save VR. And they'll bring up one specific headset, like the Oculus Pro. I think we'd all agree the Oculus Pro is kind of a dog. It's a really expensive headset that's not much better than the Oculus Quest. But it was supposed to be this presentation that was for corporate use. So it's a professional corporate VR device. And that's a category of VR headset that I don't think should exist. So you'd get these analysts saying, well, this Oculus Pro is only sold like 50,000 units and it's definitely a failure. So only Apple can come in and save VR. While completely ignoring that the Oculus Quest 2 has sold almost to the tier of the Xbox Series X and Series S. So you have an ecosystem of headsets from one company that is rivaling a console launch. I don't think we don't need Apple to save anything, but we do have an issue getting developers on board to bring new and interesting experiences to these platforms and getting consumers interested in consuming content in a different way. And VR is too personal. I can show you a video of someone playing Beat Saber, and there are some incredible mixed video presentations where someone will shoot themselves on a green screen to simulate what it looks like they're experiencing in space. That is not the same as experiencing it. If you play Beat Saber, you feel incredibly powerful. You are moved beyond your corporeal form into doing something silly, but engaged with a game in a way that you've never played it before, and in an active way where you're legit burning some calories to slash those blocks with your little lightsabers, and the beat of the music is entrancing. I can show you video gameplay of Beat Saber. It is not at all like playing Beat Saber. So Apple coming into this space, they've been hyping these huge expectations. And I feel, I genuinely do believe there have been a bunch of these leaks and rumors, like insight from someone off the record at Apple HQ is that management disagrees with what the product should be. And Tim Cook wanted simple, like AR glasses that were really easy to wear, but what they needed to design first was this VR headset that's more traditional and blah, 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 blah.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Juan, thank you for the honor of having me on your podcast. To kind of let everybody know that I do what's called Engineer Reacts. I react to smartphones, and you can find these reactions at www.youtube.com/C/Barry Johnson. I do about 1 to 2 video reactions per week, all on smartphone tech. Also, in addition to this, I'm actually going to start posting on Easy Computer Solutions channel as well, as he just has so much product that he tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, I need a little bit of help over there as well. So again, Juan, I appreciate it and hope you have a great rest of the podcast.
I actually do genuinely believe that. I feel like people at the tops of these companies start acting like biological interfaces are easy. Hey, we have this really successful smartphone. Why don't you just put the smartphone in a pair of glasses? Like, at least for as much of a megalomaniac as Steve Jobs was, I still feel like he had at least one toe grounded in reality for what that really looked like. You know, you always hear the story, like Steve Jobs takes the first iPod and he throws it in a glass of water and he sees bubbles come out of it. He's like, there's still room. There's still room to squeeze to make the iPod even smaller. You've got air in there that we could make it smaller. So, yes, that is like a crazy story of a raging narcissist CEO influencing product design. But Tim Cook was never that guy. Tim Cook is an operations guy. He's not a big idea visionary guy. So if we hear these stories about Tim Cook saying he wants AR glasses, that's the same as saying like, well, I want a holodeck. You know, it's like it's easy for me to say, yeah, I want those things too. I absolutely want that thing that you just said. Making that happen in a consumer package that's not outlandishly expensive has proven to be basically impossible with our current experience in making wearable devices. And the more you interact closely with someone's biology, it's like a logarithmic increase in difficulty. Like if you really want this to pair with a person and for them to interact with it in the best possible way, it needs to be a singular device built specifically for their biology. Okay, well, we can't do that because that's really hard to do. So we need to make it broad enough that most people can use this. That really curtails the experience. Like it really walks you back from what the best possible version of that is. And now it's a generally acceptable version of that. And I don't think the diehard Apple fans are going to have a clear sense of what that's like, because they likely haven't been engaged with all of these other experiments where I've been playing on Oculus, I've been playing on Vive, I've got a Windows mixed reality headset, and lately I've been wearing a lot of these wearable displays. So Apple, the rumor is, Apple is going to launch, what are they calling it? So Wired says it's called the Reality Pro, and it looks a little like the evolution of a Sony PlayStation VR 2, at least from what we've seen in these kinds of mock-ups and demos. So right now, the reported cost, the rumored cost, is going to be $3,000. I don't think Apple is going to do anything to save VR with their first generation product, regardless of what it costs. I think right now the most fleshed out experience is probably Oculus. I prefer not doing business with Facebook in any way that if I can help it. And the only VR headset I have in-house right now, in this moment, I have an Oculus in a storage unit, and I did play with it, a first-generation Oculus. I just couldn't set up satellites and all of the sensors and stuff. So I've stuck with a Windows mixed reality because it at least has the cameras and sensors built into the headset, and I didn't have to set up anything. But I'm also kind of curious to see the Vive. Right now, I think the easiest and most accessible gaming experience is probably PlayStation. The new PlayStation VR 2, I have not spent much time in that headset, but it is really nice. And a lot of the issues that we've had with the older and less expensive VR headsets, Sony has done an incredible job of addressing screen door effect, vibrance, image detail, clarity, how grainy the image might look as you're magnifying pixels on a screen, like right on top of your eyeballs. It is a remarkable upgrade over the first generation PlayStation VR. I don't know what Apple can bring to a VR experience that we haven't already demonstrated. Right now, I think one of the big rumors is there's going to be a focus on working with developers to just hand scan. So instead of having controllers, the cameras and the tracking and the hardware in the headset will just track your hands, and that's how you interact with software, how you interact with games, how you can manipulate objects in space, because it just follows your fingertips. That is a fantastic ideal. That is something we should aspire to work on more directly. That is something that we should absolutely be engaged with attempting, but it lives and dies by your developers. So Apple can do all the amazing work in making the hardware do it, but if developers aren't making the software experiences to utilize that feature, then it's a feature you're paying for that you're not really going to get the benefit of. And I worry that Apple is going to deliver this mostly baked, but waiting on devs. And instead, what we're going to do is bring over the VR experiences that we currently have from other platforms, and people are still going to fall back to some kind of controller. If I want to play Tetris Effect in VR, my hands are useless. I need a controller. If I want to play Beat Saber, I guess I could make fists, and that could be how I swing lightsabers around, but boy, does it feel a lot more satisfying to just have the lightsaber grip in your hands to swing the lightsabers around, to have weight and substance to move that around. So where I feel like the idea of the Reality Pro of Apple's headset could make more of a difference is in things like medicine. Like, say you want to train a surgeon on a complicated procedure, or you want to give a surgeon the ability to practice a complicated procedure, then having the dexterity of individual digits tracked in space in real time to pick up a scalpel and to move around the scene, that makes a lot of sense to me. I'm having difficulty conceptualizing other experiences where hands really are better in a way that isn't just a Nintendo nunchuck controller. Like a boxing game? Yeah, I guess it would be fine if, like, I'm jabbing and I'm punching and I'm hooking and stuff. Like, if I didn't have the controllers and it could just track my fists, well, then that would be sort of a more authentic punch. But it doesn't significantly change that game. That game was the same with controllers in my hands as it would be the same as if you were just tracking my hands. And again, from a fitness standpoint, you know, it's kind of like I'm holding these really, really light weights, you know, like maybe I'm getting a better workout if it's not just tracking my hands. I need to get into some of these comments because, like, you guys have a lot of thoughts on this. Hold on one sec. Bray Gray, Apple will create a virtual utopia. Has anything like that really taken off? I feel like every major push in VR has been like, and here's your hangout space where you can hang out with other people in VR. And I think the closest where that seems to have landed outside of like MMORPGs, Oculus has gotten us close, but I don't hear of anyone really valuing the experience of like VR hangout. Root Knight, I can't wait for the firmware that cannot be updated manually, but it will just do it on its own whenever it feels like it. Fungi455, quote, PSVR 2 sells double as many units in the first 2 weeks, end quote. Everything but Apple is a failure. Oh, and Andrew, of course. So I got to mention this. My buddy Andrew, Fat Produce here in the chat. The book, The History of the Future, really shows the early warning signs of Facebook getting their hands on Oculus. And Andrew and I were doing like a little book club for a while. We were doing these podcasts for a bit. Unfortunately, we stopped doing them, but that was one of the books we covered. So not only should you read that book, because it's a great book, but if you'd like to hear two nerds ramble on about how much they liked that book, you can. That podcast is still live. If you look for the Geek Book Club on my YouTube channel, you should be able to find it. Scrolling down. Copy Cash, what exactly are we saving at $3,000? And see, I don't wanna besmirch a high price tag. Because I look at something like the Valve Index, and that was outlandishly expensive for a VR headset. What did it launch at? Does anyone remember? Valve Index was something like $1,500, I want to say. my perception of this is a little skewed because the hot surge of VR headsets happened while I was still at Newegg. So I got to play with everything and it was awesome. But currently what I have at home is one of the first headsets that was really built on a no satellite. So you didn't have to set up little sensors and cameras in your room. And it's a not great Windows mixed reality headset, but I still bring it out from time to time. And it's really easy to power that off of a decently spec'd laptop. So I really feel like everyone's gateway drug for VR should be something like Beat Saber. Don't go to like a John Wick style first person action shooter and you're having to like reload your gun using these awkward like controller grips and stuff. Go to lightsabers and almost everyone can go, oh, okay, that's cool. That makes sense. I get it. Okay. So Simon Says Hypno says $9.99, but was that for the full kit? I want to say the Valve Index was priced at like $9.99 for the headset, and it was compatible with another company's controllers. But if you wanted the entire experience out of the box, I want to say it was more than $1,000. And again, that's where it got tricky. Like, we were working with different standards for controllers. Is this going to work with these sensors? Is your headset going to move to these other grips? And I want to say it was Vive, that the Index could work with the Vive controllers, but if you wanted the whole package, it was more. And I might totally be misremembering that. So please kick my butt in the comments if I have that wrong. See, this Michael Peppertech, again, I think this is spot on. Apple going into VR is interesting to me as it's a very solitary experience. Their other products have some sort of sharing and social aspect. VR seems very counter to Apple in that way. And I feel this is absolutely what I was commenting on. As we started talking about this, is that VR is such a contained and immersive experience. It is so difficult to share it, right? I was talking about what do you do if someone has never put a VR headset on their face? How do you tell them what it's like to play Tetris in VR? That sounds dumb, right? I'm wearing this headset. I'm putting this weight on my head, and I'm still sitting, and I'm holding a controller, and it's not like I'm flying through the Tetramino blocks and doing 3D things. It is a Tetris board floating in space in front of me. That sounds stupid. That sounds like the dumbest thing you should ever spend your money on. And I cannot tell you how many times I've set someone up, put this on their face, put the controller in their hands, let them play some boards on Tetris, and they are transported. They are taken to another dimension. And for people, especially people who enjoy old school gaming, like Tetris style gaming, that it's magical watching them experience that. It's amazing. It's awesome. Tetris Effect in VR is so good. A stupid little rhythm game. Put the headset on their head, let them play some Thumper. I don't know if anyone here is familiar with the masterpiece that is Thumper. The developer describes it as rhythmic violence. And that game is unsettling and it's dark, but it's not gory. You're this little spaceship alien bug on a track, and you've got to hit the right beats and button combinations to attack these outlandish alien creations that look like something out of like Neon Genesis Evangelion or the end of the movie Nope. I mean, like, they're these esoteric constructs of kind of Lovecraftian eldritch kind of horror as you fly through space on this path, but they're in your way, so you have to get through them. And again, you're just this dopey little bug on a track and you're holding a controller. Why should that be an amazing experience in VR? And yet, immediately, someone who's into like rhythm games loses their sense of form and self and experiences this from a perspective that you can't replicate on a nice monitor or on a phone or a tablet. I can tell you this. I just said all those words. Look at how many words I just had to expend to tell you about that experience. But until you put one on your face, you don't know what that's like. You don't. You can have an opinion on it. You can think, well, I mean, yeah, I like playing Tetris, but I wear a headset to play Tetris. Until you try it, you don't know. And for every single time I've put that on a family member, it's like, oh, this isn't, I mean, this is kind of what I was thinking, but it's not what I was expecting. You know, like those preconceived ideas, those conceptions are very difficult to kind of express beyond it's VR. Yeah, Root Knight. Remember when the Valve Index was too expensive of an entry point? And I still think it is. I'm so viscerally disappointed that things like Google Cardboard and Google Daydream didn't stick around. Because, do I still have it over here? Yeah, so here's my Daydream. And this was a really interesting step. So the Daydream was the fabric covered nicer. So Google Cardboard was just that fun little gimmicky experiment of literally folding up a piece of cardboard and putting in two lenses and slotting your phone in so that you could hold it up kind of like those old Viewmasters. If you're old like me, you remember you had the little knob on the side and it would change these paper cards with these little images and you would see a stereo 3D effect looking through the visor. So that's what Google Cardboard was. But the Daydream was this nicer fabric covered, more ergonomic, better padding. It was a really nicely built little headset here. And then it also had its own tracking controller so that you could interact with things with like a little laser pointer style interface. And this was pretty good. It wasn't bad for what this first step VR experience could be. There was a Gunslinger game on Google Daydream that was stupid fun. So it was like you would go to this one map area and all these like, kind of like Nintendo Zapper style, all these little bad guys would like pop out of the windows or come running at you and you'd have to use the little controller and shoot and reload and shoot and reload. And it was so much fun. The problem with Daydream was you had to install a phone into this casing so that the phone screen would then get magnified by the lenses in the headset. Even with the phone chips of the era, where I believe this was around the Snapdragon 820 and the 821, after about 10 minutes of gameplay, that phone is running screaming hot right on top of your face. It was not a good experience. Like, there were so many times where I'd take this thing off and like I'd kind of blink and kind of get used to my surroundings and I'd just be pouring sweat because my phone was a nuclear reactor. I know how to say nuclear. I'm saying it incorrectly for effect. If we could have gotten a Daydream 2 where the phone connected to a display in the headset, but the processing power is in the phone and not right on top of your face, I really think we'd be talking about VR in a totally different way today. And it's every time we complain about Google gets it up, you know, this idea like, hey, we want to do something disruptive. We want to do something interesting. And then a year later, they've abandoned the project. Daydream is one of the critical failures of Google's executive team, that they walked away from a practical, accessible, demonstrable VR experience that everyone with a decent phone could have participated with. They could be controlling the VR experience. You know, like when we're talking, is an Oculus Quest kind of expensive? Or, a Valve Index is like $1,000. Don't you have phones? Couldn't your phones be doing this? They could be controlling this really well right now. The chip that's in an Oculus Quest, not dissimilar from a premium tier phone. In fact, I think phones this year are likely more powerful than the chip that's currently in the Oculus Quest. So why not run that bugger with a cable to a screen on your face and reduce the processing power and the heat and make something that's a little lighter and a little more accessible and a little less expensive because it doesn't have to have all of the compute guts inside of it. It kills me that we never got a good follow-up to Google Daydream. And companies are having to reinvent the wheel to bring some kind of mixed reality or augmented reality experience to the table. I love my X-Reels. I love my Rokid Max. These wearable displays are awesome. The weakest part of that experience is the AR stuff, because it's really limited. It's basically just a fancy web browser that you can pin in space and look away from, and it stays where you pinned it. And that's cool. But to me, it's just more valuable as like a portable monitor that projects out in space in front of you, and it occupies your field of view, and it's this wonderful image that's private for you. That's not really AR. That's just a wearable computer monitor. It's an amazing wearable computer monitor, but it doesn't fulfill a lot more beyond that. So I forget how we got here. Oh, Root Knight was saying that the Valve Index was too expensive. Yeah, Dave Burns. See, also 3D Touch. Oh, see, Root Knight. I'm the wrong guy to complain about stuff like that. Root Knight says getting Apple Arcade vibes. I really wish we could break through whatever this barrier is on mobile gaming. Like, check out the Netflix catalog right now. They've just added a couple bangers. And if you already pay for Netflix, you've got all of these amazing free games that you can play that are free of microtransactions and in-app purchases. There aren't any predatory mechanics, so you can let your kids play them without worrying that they're going to try, like, you know, nuking your credit card to get more energy and gems to keep playing. Even the silly little gimmicky games, like there's this dwarf combat game where your little dwarves just march on the map, and you've got to sort of like upgrade dwarves and then accrue this material and then fight these bosses at the end of every map. And you're like, it's a dumb game, but that's a game that would have been milking you for gems and coins and energy and all that nonsense in a regular Google Play or Apple game. And here on the Netflix store, it's free of all of those predatory mechanics. So I really want Apple Arcade to succeed. I really want it to be good. I really want Google Play Pass to succeed. I really want that to enrich the developers that are participating with Apple and Google. I feel like the model is a little broken. It just makes me sad because mobile gaming has the stigma of it being just Candy Crush. And all of these people are missing. I'm having conversations with Lex's friends' parents every day. And you're like, oh yeah, I'd let my kid is playing this really cute Sonic game. And I look it up and it's a Sonic runner. So it's not even really a Sonic game. It's just him running and getting rings. And it is exactly that platform of, okay, well, you did your two runs for the day. And if you want more energy so Sonic can run faster, watch this ad or buy this energy pack. And you're like, have you just tried letting him play the actual Sonic the Hedgehog? Or instead of that, you have a Netflix account. Let him play Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Shredder's Revenge is so much more fun than Sonic runs in a straight line and gets those rings. You know, like, every day I'm having to show parents. I'm talking to one of the teachers at my kid's school. Like, maybe next year we could set up an evening, order some pizzas, and have parents come, and we can talk about gaming and their kids. Because it's like, it's either the worst of those predatory microtransaction mobile games, or it's something like Roblox. I don't know that I want my daughter really getting into Roblox. Like, just the entire platform of what Roblox is looks pretty gross to me. Even Minecraft is like, okay, it looks like a job to me, and it doesn't look like fun, but I get building and creating things, and Minecraft seems kind of fun. But Roblox? Really? But you've got a bunch of 7 to 9-year-olds at my kid's school that are constantly talking about Roblox, and I feel like their parents don't understand what their kids are into. Fat produce, got me right there. Windows Phone OS tips Fedora, as Juan mentions that if devs aren't on board, then it's DOA. Well, also, if Google actively gets in the way of dev support for apps on your platform, then yeah, it's probably going to die too. I still blame Google for the death of Windows Phone. It's probably not rational, but here we are. Tech was way more fun when we had at least three, but also two other kind of competing mobile operating systems. Ron Guido, we don't need Apple to do it. Just ask ChatGPT. Because isn't that the big investor news right now? Like, one of the big things kind of influencing Apple stock in this moment, as we're talking about it today, before WWDC launches, is speculation on Apple's initiatives for generative AI. If Apple delivers a Siri language learning model, or AI chatbot or something. And there is a ton of churn on like the investor conversations, about whether Apple can join that conversation in a meaningful way. And I think that's going to have a bigger influence on Apple's stock price than VR. It's so funny to me that Apple has slow played their VR AR initiative to the point where even if they do release this Reality Pro headset, it's going to get a bit of a bump in the news cycle and people are going to be talking about it. And I went to the Apple Experience after the keynote and I got to play with it. Great. But the people who are really into the money and into investing and finance, they're not looking at an expensive piece of hardware thinking, okay, well, this is really what's going to lift Apple's stock 3 percentage points. They're looking at, what are they going to do in disruptive software to counter ChatGPT and Bing Chat and Google Bard? Because that's where the money's going to be. That's how we're going to make ads and sell things and make consumers the product of a new ecosystem. That to me is what's so funny and upside down about our tech conversations right now, where Apple could sell, let's say Apple releases a $3,000 headset and it becomes the highest selling headset of all time. That is insane money. You would be outselling Xboxes with a console that probably requires another expensive Mac computer to fully operate, and Apple would be making incredible money on that. Let's give them this hypothetical. Even for that, I bet you Apple stock would dip if they didn't have a good reaction, if they didn't have a good competitor to ChatGPT, Bing Chat, and Bard. Because stocks are just imaginary money at this point. The stock market is not about the actual health or performance of a company, and it's all about the optics. How does the company look? All right. Oh, Dewtails. The metaverse is not here yet, so any hate is misplaced. What is the metaverse? Right now, the best example of metaverse, I think, is Fortnite. That's not boding well for our perception of what the future technology could look like for collaborative interactions with people in a virtual space.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Megapixel coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious mega pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
So, Michael Peppertech, this is kind of what I was addressing. He says, I'm guessing SharePlay implementation to stream what is being seen in the headset to other people. If they can do visual pass-through to the standard of how well transparency mode on AirPods are, that could be significant to VR as well. I'm curious how they stand apart if they do it at all. And what you've just done is help illustrate a point where Apple wouldn't be doing anything that VR headsets can't do already. They would just be putting a brand name on it. In Android land, I can send you a file over Bluetooth. I can send you a file over Wi-Fi Direct. I can send you a file through the protocol, Nearby Share, which uses Bluetooth and Wi-Fi to send files. All AirDrop is a fancy Apple brand name for that. So you can add wireless adapters, or you can plug a cable directly into a computer and everyone can see what's going on inside that VR headset. That's how we get some of these really fantastical demonstrations of people green screening themselves into a map, into a level on Beat Saber. That hasn't, if Apple just makes SharePlay, and even if it's a better version of like a wireless connection that you can stream it to a TV, you still aren't capturing the immersive quality. I can already do that. I can already take out my mixed reality headset and plug in the USB-C cable into this PC and screen record everything that I see in that field of view as I'm moving around, and you get a sense of what the peripheral vision might look like, but it's still not capturing the experience of what it's like to really have that headset on my face. In fact, it's even more jarring because as you move, the screen is recording all of the little micro movements of your head. And when you look at the video on a stationary display, that's way worse. Because you see all of those little micro jitters and stutters, especially if it's playing at a decently high frame rate, it's nauseating. If someone else takes your head and shakes it to their perspective, that's nauseating. That's nausea-inducing. But when you have the headset on, your eyes take into account your own movement. So you don't see micro judders as your biology moves around. Your body compensates for that, and the perspective is fixed to your face, so it moves with you in a way that you can't smooth out in a replay or in a share or in a stream. So again, I like, from the collaborative standpoint, or from that, hey, we really want to share this experience, one of the critical problems is how few VR experiences allow the participant, the person in the headset, to interact with other people. So it's usually not as big a problem for all the people around the user, because you can do things like share what they see on the screen. But if I'm playing Beat Saber, I can't listen and talk to other people. One of the only games I've played that I think works directly against that separation is, I forget what the name of it is. It's Keep Talking or We All Explode. What is the name of that game? That's really going to bug me. Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. So it's this really fun game. I mean, you can play it on a variety of platforms, but I really like it in VR. And so one person puts on the headset, and so they're in bomb defusal mode, but they aren't listening to music or sound effects or game audio. They're listening to everyone else in the room. So it's kind of like everyone else in the room is Chloe from 24, right? They're the sidekick in the chair with the manual, but the person wearing the headset is standing in front of this bomb. And they have to describe all the pieces and parts of the bomb, and then everybody else is contributing, like, oh, I've got the section on wire cutting. Okay, so you need to look for this wire, but see if it's grounded, and then you can do this. Oh, there's this weird little key box. Okay, well, if you want to pick that key box, you've got to do this and blah, 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 blah. What did it say when you punched in this code? Did it give you an error message, or did it come up with, like, a green light? The light's flashing red. Okay, that's bad, you know? So that, to me, is one of those VR collaborative experiences. But that, I mean, it's such a specific example, right? Like, you're playing that one game. It's hard to keep bringing more of those experiences to the table. And almost we want kind of the reverse. Like, I kind of want to do everyone in VR headsets for a fantasy role-playing game and one person not in a VR headset with a good global eye view of all the characters and players. But, man, that's tough getting, like, six VR headsets around a table to play a game that way. It's kind of like, you know, the Nintendo Wii U. Four or five people can look at the screen, and then one person could hold that oversized tablet and do something different in a collaborative game. Yeah, Kenox, D&D in VR would be awesome. It would be so much fun. But then we'd have to think, what are the logistics of getting multiple VR headsets around a table like that? It's just, whew, it's pretty intense. Simon says, Hypno, the MetaQuest VR 2 is a, the MetaQuest 2 128 gig model is $299 today. What an interesting time to put a VR headset on sale right before Apple's keynote address. I'm still not giving Facebook any of my money to then also capture all of my personal information, but if you were inclined to work through your own personal issues with Facebook and hardware and their data trafficking policies, that's a really good price for a pretty good starter VR experience. The Quest 2 performs pretty well as a standalone game console. I consider the Quest 2 to be our first real version of a VR console. You don't need to own another piece of hardware to play the game on the headset. It is its own product, its own ecosystem. If you can pair a nicer headset with a more powerful console or computer, you do get better fidelity, better game performance, a different catalog of games to play that focus on different experiences. But if you want to play like Tetris Effect and Beat Saber and games like that, an Oculus is perfectly capable at handling those kinds of experiences. But there's a reason why a PlayStation VR 2 is so expensive and still needs a PlayStation 5 to connect to it. And the visual fidelity and the experience of using that PSVR 2 is a higher tier. It is more expensive and it's better. Yeah, Michael Peppertech. Xreal is supporting 3-axis with the wireless adapter that just came out. I like to see what they're doing. They're going to be adding apps to the adapter so you don't have to use a phone in the future. And to me, that is definitely a commentary on the state of smartphones. Like, a OnePlus now no longer has video output. So the OnePlus 11 cannot connect to any of these portable displays or AR glasses. So you have to go to making your own pocket computer to power the glasses and talk to another computer that doesn't have the ability to put out video. And that makes me crazy sad. I'll be really curious to see if the Xreal Beam really does more than what you can do with the Xreal app on a phone that can put out video. Because if it's just sort of their solution to do a pass-through, then that to me is disappointing. And also, we still need to see if they're going to get their Windows app out soon. So the Xreal Windows experience is still in beta, and that should be coming also. So, from Fat Produce, Sonic the Hedgehog. Am I a joke to you? So I don't know why, but kids in my daughter's class are super into Sonic. I know the movie came out, but like Super Mario's just okay. I mean, the movie, I was literally talking to her friend Luca, and he was like, yeah, I saw the Super Mario movie. It was okay, but he's not as good as Sonic. You're like, this is amazing. I would love to go back in time to the era of the Sega Genesis and just say like, hey guys, you don't know what kind of property you have on your hands here, because generationally this is going to outlive what you think it will be. But I'm talking to Lex, and you're like, hey, do you want to know about Sonic? We've never seen the movie. We could rent the movie, or if you want, you could play the game. And she plays through part of the first level and just kind of puts the controller down, and I'm not really interested in this. And that kind of lit me up a little bit. Like, I'm not saying you got to eat all your vegetables here, kid, but you do have to understand different kinds of games. So I start describing, and I start trying to tell her about platformers. You know, it's not a game where you're in a 3D environment, because she's played some of those. It's not like a twin stick shooter where she's played some of those. It's not even like Overcooked. Like, she's actually pretty good at Overcooked now. She's better than my wife at Overcooked. So I'm trying to describe platformers, and she's kind of like, yeah, dad, whatever. And she's kind of in her 7-year-old way, sort of listening, but not, and kind of rolling her eyes at me talking to her about this. And then she sees me playing Dead Cells, and she's like, daddy, what's that? I go, oh, Dead Cells, I believe Dead Cells is one of the all-time best combat platformers. Oh, you mean those games where you like jump on things and like attack enemies? Absolutely. Well, can I try it? And she's seeing the animation and she's seeing the art and the little pixel graphics, and she thinks it's hilarious whenever the main character is gesturing and like, why doesn't he talk? So I have to start explaining some of the lore, which is kind of dark and a little ghastly in Dead Cells for being such a vibrant and cartoony art style. And so I set her up a whole new account and I put the thing in her hands, and she dies on the very first enemy. And she is despondent. She is maybe the most upset I think I've ever seen her at trying something new. This includes learning how to ride a bicycle. And you know the catastrophe of emotions that kids go through when they're learning how to ride a bicycle. So she's critically upset. And I'm holding her, and I'm holding... I was having her play on the Razor Edge so that the keys and the buttons were a little bit smaller. The Razor Edge. So I was having her play Dead Cells on this guy right here, just so she had a little bit more of like a Nintendo Switch-style accessibility. And so then I explain, well, watch what happens. So it says body desecrated, right? It didn't say you died. She says, well, what do you mean? And we watch the little pile of slime crawl out of the body and fall down the pipe and go into a new body, and it re-energizes. And I go, your character is cursed, but your character can't die. Your character has to discover the mysteries of what happened to this kingdom. And it was like a switch flipped. I can't die? No, you always come back and build a new body, and then you get to explore new parts of the mystery. She died, I think, 7 more times on the very first enemy. Let me tell you, kids, if you were a kid, if you're my age and you were a kid, 7, 8, 9, you know, Atari was out, the Nintendo had just been released, you know, the exciting era of 8-bit graphics, you know, playing games like Contra, you know, you would die 3 times, game over, one hit, you're dead, go back to the beginning of the level, you know, like those kinds of games. Boy, howdy, are kids today not prepared for that at all. But now she has made it through the first 2 dungeons on Dead Cells, but it took a long time for her to start picking up the mechanics of move character this way, attack, move character that way, dodge. I mean, it's a structurally complex gameplay loop, and that's one of the things that's so satisfying about Dead Cells, but it's definitely a barrier to entry. So, sorry, that was a really long-winded way of saying my daughter has no interest in Sonic the Hedgehog, but she is at least now looking at playing some other platformers. So we might try and go back and catch like a Super Mario World. Like, that could be kind of fun. I've got it on the little SNES Mini over there, and she might be into that. But again, it was just that one realization. I can't die? Not ever. Oh, and it was totally okay to make mistakes after that point. Oh, Matt Klein, that's dirty. Apple releases a $3,000 VR headset, but the strap is an optional $999 accessory. Here's the new Reality Pro XR headset from Apple. And if you want these machined stainless steel casters for your headset, they're only $500 a piece. Oh, McCorkran, I hadn't seen this. So McCorkran says, the leaks on this AR headset are so crazy. These battery packs that you wear around your belt. Really curious what this thing is going to be. I had not heard anything like that. I feel a $3,000 headset with batteries that you have to strap to other parts of your body. I feel that's a non-starter. I'm a fan of these other headsets and things that are powered by other computers so that you don't have to have components on your head. Like, I show off the X-Reel and I show off the Rokid, and immediately someone goes, but it would be better if it could just be powered all on its own. And you're like, you don't want the weight of batteries and the heat of batteries on your skull. Not on a little flimsy pair of glasses. You don't want that. That is a miserable experience. That is really, really bad. But when we're talking about a more robust and balanced VR headset that has space for these other components and you can add to that and balance the weight and put it in appropriate places, if they moved the batteries off of the headset, that's kind of dumb. I don't like that at all. Because that's immediately one step more difficult than that $300 Oculus. The $300 Oculus that we were just talking about, you put it on your head, you play your game. It just works. If the Apple Reality Pro, you've got to strap batteries to a belt and then put it on and connect that immediately. That is a pain point for operation that is a deal breaker, in my opinion. If the headset is standalone and I need to plug in a cable because it's powered off of a laptop or it's powered off of my desktop, that's one thing. But if it's supposed to be a standalone device, but it's got modular components like a battery belt, like a bandolier of batteries, woohoo! I don't like that idea at all. I really hope that's not true. We're going to find out here in about 12 minutes, because we're going to have to start wrapping up some of this gameplay. Root Knight, Sega does what Nintendo don't. Sega! I was a Nintendo nerd. As a kid, I liked playing Sega Genesis games, but I was definitely Team Nintendo. Yeah, it's just funny to me. Like, I don't see kids playing Super Mario, but we'll go out to the park and kids are running around that field. I'm Sonic. No, I'm Sonic. You can be Tails. Like, dang, yo. Yeah, I don't get it, Jonathan. Jonathan says, kids for several generations have been super into Sonic. My brother, my adult son, my brother's son, all were hardcore Sonic fans. But it's to me, it's just so interesting because we haven't had the same proliferation of consistent content. Like, Nintendo puts out Mario Kart and Smash Brothers and individual Mario games and Mario RPGs and Mario Makers and 2D and 3D gameplay. And Sonic's game history is a lot less consistent, but there's something about that character. It just latches on. It's incredible. Yeah, see, Matt Klein, I want this so bad. Having a phone be the brains of a headset absolutely makes the most sense, keeps the cost down, and puts especially the top chips, like the HN2 and the Apple A16, to good use. We are radically underusing this type of processing power. And I'm telling you, like, you know, just playing a nice little mobile game, even a game like Alien Isolation, you are not maxing out a Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 or a Dimensity 9200. Kappa Cash, after Shredder's Revenge, she's like, what Sonic? It's still one of the proudest dad moments, because we only played it together, but she legitimately contributed. Like, she was actually playing the game. And we got to roll credits on Shredder's Revenge. And I'm trying to tell other parents, you don't know. This Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game is so much fun. You can have multiple kids playing, so they're not fighting over the controller, they're not fighting over the tablet, they're not fighting over your phone. You can play with them. And it's so much fun to just play a couple missions in Shredder's Revenge. I mean, we would play... Lex was usually good for about three. We could do three missions, and then we would need to take a break, and she would be getting too fidgety or too overly stimulated or whatever. But we rolled credits on Shredder's Revenge, and she was so delightfully proud of herself. We beat the whole game? And, like, she had to go running to tell her mom. She was telling friends at school who had no idea what she was talking about. Her teachers were like, yeah, boy, that's good. Good, you finished the game. And in that way that, like, older people and parents and teachers are like, you played the Nintendo. You did a game and you were playing Nintendo? Like, no attachment to it all. I really, you know, like, just talking this all out about what Apple and WWDC might bring, I really need to talk to her school. I need to set up a parents class on these are the things that might harm your children in video games. It's not necessarily the content, but game ratings have nothing to do with monetization and gameplay mechanics. And here are ways that you can minimize some of that experience and share some of this with your own kids and not have to buy anything. If you already have this and you already have a Netflix account, or you already have this and you're paying for Apple Arcade, or if you're doing this and you do Google Play Pass, you can prevent some of these other things from happening. I've decided that next year for my daughter's school, I'm going to set up a parents' night. We're going to do an educational parents' night over pizza, maybe do pizza and beer if if any of the other parents are interested in imbibing. And I'm going to bring a Steam Deck and my Razer Edge. I'll have to score an iPhone or an iPad or something. And I'll set up a little monitor and plug all this stuff in and say, okay, well, here's Marvel Future Fight. You think this is just a fun Marvel game for your kids. But to rank up one character to meet the meta and continue playing at a top-tier level, you would need to spend around $1,500. In the game Marvel Future Fight, there are 200 characters that you can upgrade. And if you want to have a good roster so that you can participate with clans, you would easily spend roughly $40,000 or $50,000 to get up to specs really quickly. Or you could just grind for a couple of years as the game continues to put out new characters and leave you behind. And then watch their eyes glaze over as, I don't know what that means. What do you mean you need Captain America bios? What is this inventory that you need to keep track of? Why are there crystals? This is so beyond so many parents right now. It's maddening. McCorkran asking, are you going to react to this live or are you going to log off and watch the event? I kind of mentioned at the beginning of the stream, I don't want to even have to mess with any kind of like Apple IP. They're not typically very litigious, but on the off chance that like the stream gets pulled or we get a takedown or something like that, I purposely started the podcast early just so that we could wrap up in about 6 minutes. And then we can all just go over to WWDC and I'll probably just hang out on the Patreon. And if anyone who's on the Patreon, we can chat about it there. I would normally live tweet, but again, with my liberal guilt and how much of a festering cesspool Twitter has become, I am looking for any other opportunity to not contribute to the presentation of content on Twitter. I don't think Mastodon is the right place to be doing tons and tons and tons and tons of pithy WWDC reaction posts or toots. So I don't think I'm going to do that on the Mastodon, but if you're on the Patreon and you're in the Discord, we can maybe hang out there and just kind of go through some of those announcements. I have a ton of writing I need to do also, and I don't cover a lot of Apple, so this is really just me listening to see what the next conversation points about Apple are going to be. And then once this all goes live, I have to expect that there's going to be some great conversations from Gadget Goddess. That crew, they stream on Tuesdays. So look out for the Tuesday stream. Eric at Easy Computer Solutions, I'm sure, is going to have some thoughts. He streams on Wednesday. Thursday, I don't know if Mike is regularly streaming, but I bet you Ike Talks Tech is going to be talking about this on Thursday. And then TK and I will follow up with some of our thoughts later in the week after all of the news has kind of come out and reactions and thoughts and stuff. So we'll probably follow up WWDC on Thursday. But that's another one, like, that's a conversation I really want to have with TK and just kind of see what his thoughts are, too. So we'll be able to kind of share that later in the week. So, oh, yeah, sorry, McCorkran. Yeah, we started this podcast early this week. I don't have a good system. Like, I don't have a good way on Twitch to, like, notify well. So I kind of just leave it up to, like, other social media. Like, I post it on YouTube and I post it on Mastodon. And then you're like, I guess if people get the notification or the alert that we're going, cool. But there's no way to kind of, like, fix that. I need to get better at the Twitch because I'm sure there are likely calendar tools that I am not utilizing well. And I could be scheduling this stuff. But I even forgot to set up. I've been trying to do like an Instagram co-stream just so that people on IG can kind of pop in and say hey. And a few of those have actually done pretty decent view-wise. I completely spaced it. Woke up this morning, got up early, got everything all set up. Hey, I feel like I'm ahead of the curve. I'm probably missing something. Nah, it's going to be fine. And I pushed go and then went, oh, I don't have the other phone here to do the IG stream. All right. Here we go. Cool. Gormlord, ugh, my recommendations are going to be annoying for a couple of days. So many hot takes are going to be coming out. And again, I don't want to leave this off. I have very personal, philosophical, and political reasons for why I don't cover Apple more directly. I feel at the consumer level, there is a difference between someone buying an Apple product and enjoying it and that person just getting through their day and using technology they enjoy and my criticisms of a $1 trillion organization. There's a gulf between why I choose not to participate in the Apple conversation more consistently and the person who's just trying to make it through their day using Apple products. So I'm not trying to take anything away from that individual who likes what they own, they use what they do, but I still have to share those concerns and those criticisms. And also how the market talks about Apple, I feel is toxic. I feel it's destructive to a fair and open conversation about technology use in general. We keep getting all of these myths about what Apple does and they do this and, oh, they always do it the bestest. And so many times that is proven to not be true. What they do well, they do really well. But that doesn't mean they're bulletproof. That doesn't mean they're infallible. It doesn't mean that they haven't had as many failures as they've had monster successes. So that's just kind of the last idea I want to leave off with. We're going to shut this down now. We're going to go ahead and wrap this up. And I think all of us are going to probably head over, at least kind of tangentially, kind of follow the thread of what's being announced at WWDC. And if you're into that, and if you're into that ecosystem and you're excited about a developer conference, then I want you to have a good time. I don't want you to worry about what my little snarky interjections might mean for a community of people that, you know, embrace and enjoy that kind of ecosystem. So, let me get this at J-Man. You've got 2 minutes left. So in our last 60 seconds here, folks, I hope you're having a wonderful time. I hope you're doing some exciting things. And we've got plenty of conversations to follow up on. I have a ton of videos and articles and editorials on somegadgetguy.com. This has been an amazing week for traffic to the website, actually. And there's a lot of stuff that's coming out. I've got a tablet that's coming out. I've got some earbuds that are coming out. I've got some follow-ups. And I'm doing that camera comparison between the Xiaomi 13 Ultra and the Sony Xperia 1 Mark V, which should be out at the end of this week. So stay tuned. Even if you're not into the Apple conversation this week, there's going to be a ton of other stuff to follow up on. So have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you back here at our normal time, 9 a.m. Pacific, for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care of yourself so you can take care of others. I'll catch you back. I love you all.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.